courage, thinking, and the wisdom to know the difference. The Al-Anon family groups are a fellowship of relatives and friends of alcoholics who share their experience, strength, and hope in order to solve their common problems. We believe alcoholism is a family illness and that changed attitudes can aid recovery. Al-Anon is not allied with any sect, denomination, political entity, organization, or institution, does not engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any cause. There are no dues for membership. Al-Anon is self-supporting through its own voluntary contributions. Al-Anon has but one purpose, to help families of alcoholics. We do this by practicing the 12 steps, by welcoming and giving comfort to families of alcoholics, and by giving understanding and encouragement to the alcoholic.
Thank you so much. And I've asked Frances to read our workshop opening. If you would please unmute and read for us.
Hi, everybody. I'm Frances. This is the Al-Anon suggested welcome. We welcome you to this Zoom Al-Anon family group and hope you will find in this fellowship the help and friendship we have been privileged to enjoy. When I first considered reaching out to others, I might hesitate. Didn't I come to Al-Anon to focus on my individual experience, to seek my own recovery? Wouldn't contributing to the common good just divert me from personal progress? After finally learning to focus on myself, wouldn't helping others distract me from that goal? In helping others, we drop any pretense that I alone am in charge of my separate recovery. We acknowledge the common bond that unites us in the program, and we take steps, however halting and uneven, to align ourselves with the guidance of a higher power. By passing on the guidance we have received, we learn a new humility. Still, we might find the concept of doing service daunting, difficult, or frightening. The word itself has as much appeal as duty, responsibility, commitment, or work. The thought of participating in any activity may help call up our worst fears of experiencing all over again the criticism, embarrassment, frustration, and even despair we have known in the past. Service and recovery are not independent of each other. Both are part of the spiritual awakening that continues to guide us. The more willing we become to practice all of this program, the more progress we can make in recovering from the effects of another's alcoholism and in living our lives more fully. What we may not notice beyond our fears is that Al-Anon gives us a chance to do either just a little or a lot. At first, we may experience some discomfort. We can go at a pace that doesn't leave us overwhelmed. As we progress, we begin to notice other side of service. We're learning and growing at an extraordinary pace. Oh, that's from the book, When I Got Busy, I Got Better. Page one.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And we'll be continuing to read from that book for Penny. If you would please read the section, New Perspectives in Reaching Out, Together We Can. And that's page 38 and 39 from When I Got Busy, I Got Better.
Okay. Reaching out in service gave me a new perspective on our common welfare. My need for the support of the program didn't end when I began carrying the message. I didn't graduate from bewildered student to serene, wise, calm, and calm teacher. Instead, I felt a deeper acceptance of sharing a common problem with all Al-Anon members. In helping others, I was helping myself. When contributing to our common welfare, I was safeguarding my individual opportunity to make personal progress. When joining with others in Al-Anon service, I also noticed that together we could accomplish what we couldn't achieve separately. we became more effective than the sum of our individual contributions. We helped each other grow. While service activities helped focus my attention on common welfare and unity, it didn't magically create a deeper sense of shared purpose in the rest of my life. It did, however, give me a basis of comparison for determining if a common welfare existed. Was unity a realistic goal in my dealing with family, friends, business, and community? Having applied the first tradition to service in Al-Anon, I began to distinguish between relationships to which I participated in a common welfare and ones in which I didn't. I began to understand as well that when I felt no sense of unity with others, my personal welfare suffered. From when I got busy, I got better.
Thanks,
Penny. Page 38, 39.
Thank you for all of your help. That's it. Thank you. Remember, any sharings are solely the opinion of the member and not that of the Arizona area or Al-Anon as a whole. Now, at this time, I would like to introduce our first speaker, Nikki. Nikki, please unmute and share.
I'm happy to be here. It's nice to see all of you new faces. I'm going to start my timer since I know I have 15 minutes. I tend to go on and on. I love telling stories. So I'm going to start by telling you a little bit about my background. I won't spend too much time on it, but I was born in a family. My parents were not alcoholics, but when I was almost 10 years old, my only sister was born and she was special needs. So I was an only child for all those years. And then all of a sudden there was this crisis in my family, and it was a crisis. My father poured himself into his work. My mother got terribly ill, you know, staying up with my sister all night long, very kind of traditional family where my dad was the breadwinner. And so I grew up thinking that I couldn't have needs, and my poor sister, and I was angry, but I didn't have anybody to be angry at. And so I developed sort of my own flavor of codependence through always trying to be sort of the white knight in shining armor as I grew up. And that kind of that background, I think, is what attracted me to the man that I married, who I'm now divorced from him, but he is a very kind and wonderful man who comes from a long line of alcoholics and dysfunction, and he was quite broken. And so I married this man thinking that I could fix him. And I've always been sort of a high achiever, kind of always taking on a lot, trying to prove myself. And so I kind of was the controller of my family and everybody. Actually, my ex-husband just now texted me asking me what he should get my son for Christmas, you know, so it still goes on. So anyway, I was always the one who would have all the parties and make everything happy for everybody. And my husband's drinking got worse and worse. And he would verbally abuse me and our son a lot. And it started out when he'd been drinking, but it would carry on. He had very high anxiety and it was a very difficult time. And so when I came to Al-Anon, you know, everything was right with me. I was just like the bee's knees. I could do everything for everybody. I did not come to Al-Anon like that first reading from when we got, when I got busy, I got better. I did not come to Al-Anon to seek my own recovery. I came, like many of us, to figure out how to get my husband to quit drinking so that our lives would be happier. And there was no question in my mind that's why I was there. So when I came into Al-Anon, I didn't feel really a part of it. I came in sort of sheepishly. I never wanted to be there on time. I always wanted to come late. I was embarrassed to say my name. So I would, we live in a fairly small town, and I was mortified that maybe I would see someone there I knew, because then they'd know that my husband was drinking, all those things a lot of us have gone through. So I would come to the meetings late and I would leave early. I did not want anyone to welcome me. It's like, oh my God, I don't even want to be here. That's how I felt. I hid all my literature from my husband. And, you know, it's a really funny thing, because I have always sort of thought of myself as a non-joiner, sort of a go my own way kind of girl, you know, but I really didn't want to commit to being one of those people, one of us, you know? And so I never wanted to go to any of the potlucks or anything or any of the other events. I just didn't feel a part of the group at all. And then after a while, I started getting a little more comfortable. I'd stay a little later. I started feeling okay about talking to people. I think about the second month that I was in the program, I shared, and it was a horrible thing that had just happened, like one of those crisis things that new members tend to share. And I was in tears and telling this horrible story of something that had happened with me and my husband the weekend before or something. And someone came up to me who had spoken, been a speaker at one of our meetings. And I asked her if she would be my sponsor, because I'd heard, you know, again, I was like type A achiever. It's like, I'm going to get a sponsor. I'm going to work these steps. I'm the kind of person who went through the book, counted the questions, figured if I do X number of questions every week, this is going to take me this amount of time. And I'm here to tell you that it took me 5 years to get through the 12 steps. So, and I learned so much by taking it slowly. But my sponsor gently encouraged me to do small service jobs, because I was so, the thing about being such a high achiever, hyper productive person who's always trying to prove herself is that we tend to take on a lot, like leadership positions in service organizations and all these things I was doing. And I just didn't feel like, you know, I didn't feel like this was what I could be doing. So she encouraged me to do very small things, like maybe set up the room before the meeting or something like that. So I did a little bit of that. I started getting a little more comfortable about sharing. She encouraged me to lead a meeting, which was, you know, a little different. I mean, these are like my first forays into service. And then I had just totaled my car. The roads were really icy. I mean, not that day, but I was in the body shop. I was sitting in the body shop to ask me if I would do some service around some event. And I wasn't even about to go to any event. And I was like totally freaked out. And I forget exactly what I told you. I told you no, in kind of a sheepish way, I'm sure. And then I'm just telling you some of my early experiences. I remember one of our members, we would, whenever we would have meetings about service or the concepts, it would be like, oh, geez, I wish I'd known, I would have stayed home. You know, that's kind of how I felt in my head. I hated it, I thought. And so anyway, there was this one meeting about service, and one of our members stood up and, oh my gosh, she was so enthusiastic, over the top, enthusiastic, talking about her service. And I just, on the inside, I was like rolling my eyes thinking, oh my, you know, whatever. I had judgment around it. I mean, I'm just admitting all these feelings that I had that just are, you know, were hurting me more than anyone. And my response a lot of times when people would ask me about service is that I was doing too much already, which of course I was. So looking back on it now with what I know, with now 6 years of program under my belt, I really think that of course I had a fear of taking on too much responsibility and failing because I was trying to do too much, stressing myself out. But I think the real fear that I had was becoming a real part of this community because I hadn't really quite opened my heart to it, even though I was seeing the benefits of it. And I don't know if any of you can relate to this. It actually, you know, it is just how I felt. And I'm here to tell you the truth about how I felt. So I was kind of a slow bloomer in terms of service. So what happened was I had to do it on my own terms. And so there was a member of our group who had been secretary. And I watched this woman just bloom and grow. And she was funny. And she just grew into the group through her service position of secretary. And I just watched this happen over the course of the year. And then she was looking, I don't know if she did it 1 year or 2 years, but I watched her grow in it. So she was looking for someone. She was stepping down and they needed someone to be secretary. And I started giving it some thought. And I thought, you know, I bet I could do this. And, you know, it could give me an opportunity to be more a part of a group like Jackie. And so I went up to her and I asked her more about what it was about. I volunteered to be the secretary, started going to our group's business meetings, and that felt pretty good just to get to know people and work with people more. And then after another, I don't know, I think it was a year later, I volunteered to be speaker chair because I thought, wow, how kind of cool is that to be able to reach out to people who maybe I don't know very well, and invite them to tell their stories and to pay attention to, you know, what people share and just listen in a new way for who might be a good speaker. So then I did that position. And then not quite a year ago, I guess it was earlier this year in the spring, a woman who I worked with early in my career, and we know how each other work, and she had been our district secretary and she needed to step down, and she kept announcing it. And I started thinking about it and I thought, you know, I know this woman, I know how organized she is. And I bet it would be a really kind of a nice way for me to start into service at the district level, because she'll have, you know, I know that she'll fill me in on, you know, how she does things, and it'll make it easier than what I might think it might be. So now I'm our district secretary, I'm our speaker chair. And in the district secretary position, I've been doing it since April, and I'm really starting to grow into the position. And I'm getting to know people in a new way, and people who attend meetings that I don't usually go to because the time isn't good for me. And it's been really important to me to understand how much all these people who give service care not only about the other people in the program, but that they care about the program itself and how it operates, and they are so appreciative of how the programs help them. So part of what I love about the service positions that I've had is that once I commit to it, I have a certain responsibility to do the things that are expected of me, but the way I choose to do it is mine. And people in this program, I think part of just our coming up in the program helps people know that the best way to work together is to give people the autonomy and the respect and the dignity to figure out how they're going to do a job. So I love that part of being an Al-Anon service. I want to mention before I close, I have a few more minutes left, I think. I want to mention something that we just did in our district. We did a district inventory, and we had a discussion at the district business meeting about the results of this. And part of it was talking about service and why people are reluctant. And we had a discussion, part of it is like those of us who have sponsees, it's a matter of feeling ready. Like when I first came in the program, I was feeling sort of in crisis, or maybe I was working through my own issues, but I wasn't ready to jump in right away. And I know that it was actually, this is such a good topic for me. It feels like a higher power moment that brought the invitation to me to talk on this topic. But being ready, and then we were talking about how a lot of people are intimidated when they hear about the district. And I don't know how it is in your district, but that people feel like there's a lot of mystique around it and they don't know what's going on. And so one of the newer members who's part of our district, she's a GR, she was saying she started going to potlucks, and the idea of reaching out and letting people know that it's not really something where only people who've been in Al-Anon forever are in, and that it is a way to get to know how everything works. And the other thing is that the personal connection of asking a person if they might be interested in a position because you think they would be good at it is a way to invite others into service. So I chose to participate when I was ready. And again, I really think it all had to do with higher power and, you know, working the program. And service work has become an important part of my recovery that I never really expected. My fear of commitment to the group has transformed into a deep appreciation of how we work together to create the path to recovery that we've all chosen. Service for me is the next step in the concept that Al-Anon is a we program. So it's sort of like when I encourage my sponsees, my new members, to pick up the 1,000-pound telephone and call someone else, because when we start making those personal connections, it becomes a we program. And so when we do service as a group with others, it just intensifies the we-ness piece of the program. And by giving myself more fully to Al-Anon, I've begun to accept the parts of myself I couldn't acknowledge, that I don't know if I felt like I was better than everybody else, or that, you know, what it was that made me feel like I'm a non-joiner, but whatever all that was, that baggage that I was carrying, doing service has helped me see another side to all of this and see the richness of the service opportunities in Al-Anon. And that's all I have. So thank you very much for inviting me. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much, everybody. A round of jazz hands. And I would now like to introduce our next speaker, Karen. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Karen P., and I'm talking to you from Montana also, but not anywhere as populated as Bozeman. But I'm glad to be here, and I'm really glad to talk about service. It's one of those things that I think we all have different feelings about, but it's kind of a topic we don't often want to talk about. When I came into the rooms of Al-Anon, I was... crazy lady that did everything and belonged to everything, and was way overextended and always happy to give everything I had, and was so overextended I probably didn't do a very good job of anything. When I came, doing service work was was not difficult, or the idea of it was not difficult, the whole idea of doing service work. So I jumped in probably really quickly and was really happy to participate. And I know that for me, by taking service positions, whether they were small, for example, like if I was going to come and open the meeting site and make coffee, any of those kinds of things, or take care of the money, or do any service position, I know that it was really a way, it helped me to feel like a part of. I think I spent a lot of my life feeling like I'm in the room with a million people and I feel like I'm by myself. And I really wanted to reach out and be a part of, because when I came, I knew that that was what I needed. I felt like if I did not make this work, I thought I was probably not going to survive, literally. And so for me to get there, and it made me feel at home, and it made me talk to other people and communicate with other people. But I think, you know, more than anything, it made me show up. If I had the key, I had to go to the meeting. If somebody was counting on me to make the coffee, I had to show up and make the coffee, because I was that responsible person that always did what everybody expected of me. So in some respects, you know, my issues in Al-Anon and being of service is to find balance and not overextend and not overcommit and not be trying to do too much and not really follow through on what I was supposed to be doing. I still have to be a little bit careful with that. So I feel really grateful that I've been able to be of service. You know, I know that, over the years, as I've started meetings, I think it's really important to remember that if we don't follow the guidelines and if we don't be of service, that there won't be meetings and there won't be workshops like this, and there wouldn't be chairs at the meeting, and there wouldn't be all those things. So, you know, part of it really is, in being of service, we do need to do our part, or we will have nothing. It's nobody likes to show up for the meeting and have the door locked and have the person that's supposed to unlock not be there. So I think it's okay, and it's good to make commitments. The people that I work with, I encourage them to be of service somehow. I would say that one of my favorite ways of being of service to others is through sponsorship. I think that when we work with other people, I can often look at it and wonder if, you know, who's getting and who's giving. And I think a lot of people, when they're first asked to be a sponsor, think that, what do I know? I'm not done with the steps, or I'm not done with the traditions, or I have more work to do, or I don't have time, or a million other excuses why you don't want to be a sponsor. But I can say for me that the most growth I've had has been in sponsoring other people. I think that in sponsoring other people, it's kept me in a lot of respects, it's kept me really active in the program. I don't often go very many days at a time without at least talking to somebody in Al-Anon. That helps me work my program, if I'm talking to people in Al-Anon all the time, whether it's as a sponsor or a sponsee, or if it's doing some service work. So that's how I make sure that I'm working my program, by working with lots of people and doing something in the program most days. You know, when we are alone, and I remember what it felt like to be that person alone in the room of many. I wanted to feel something different in Al-Anon. And unless we connect with people somehow, we're not gonna ever be a part of. We're never gonna feel a part of. And I know that there's people who do come to the meetings and they don't stick around and they don't, pretty soon they're not coming back because they're not a part of. And if anybody's listening and they've not held a service position, I would encourage you, and you don't feel a part of, I would encourage you to find a service position. Or maybe when somebody asks you to be your sponsor, maybe that's what you're supposed to do, is be a sponsor. I know that there's a lot of things in this world that I can't do alone. In fact, most things I can't do alone. You know, if it weren't for all the people in my life, I don't know how I'd get through most of the things in my life, and for sure the difficult things. You know, we weren't dropped on this planet by ourselves for a reason. I think there's other people around us to support us and help us and be there for us and lift us up and share, and that in and of itself is enough reason to get out there and agree to do some service works, be a part of, and get to know people and reach out. And it's not always easy. It's not always easy, but you know, take those first steps and make those phone calls and show up at meetings. And you know, I hope that if you see me there, I can help you do that. One of the things that I get from being a sponsor also is that being a sponsor helps me remember where I was, how things were. It's pretty easy to be complacent. And for me, some of those things happened decades ago. And I have a hard time. It's hard to remember. And it feels like that person that did that, those things happened to, isn't me anymore. But in a lot of respects, it also gives me a ton of gratitude to be able to work with other people. And it reminds me of why I came into the rooms of Al-Anon in the first place. So if you need to ask somebody to be your sponsor, the one thing I would say is that when somebody is your sponsor, you're giving them a gift. You know, they're not just giving, they're getting something back. So it's a two-way street. So when you think of it, try to always think of it that way. When I was thinking about unity today too, and if it's realistic to, if it's a realistic goal in dealing with family and community, and you know, and I'm not sure that it is always realistic, but I do know that we all can try to do our part with unity. You know, and many times I don't like to admit it, but when I think about unity, especially in my community or my family, I want to be, I too easily jump out and want to accuse another family member or community member of not, it's their fault that there's no unity in this family. It's their fault that there's no unity in this community. Well, what I really need to be doing is looking at myself and making sure that my side of the street is doing its part. I have a tendency on occasion to overstep. I have to make sure that I'm not judging people. You know, so I have to play a role in unity, in my family, and when we're being of service. Lots of times also, you know, sometimes I think I know what's best. And I also worry that other people are going to think they know what's best when I have it. We have a disagreement. And, you know, some of the things that I think about when I choose to be in charge is, how important is it? What are my motives for doing what I'm doing? Is it my ego talking? You know, is it my ego doing? Am I doing it? You know, so for example, when I decide I'm going to go be chairman of a committee, and I have a committee I'm supposed to be working with, if I, you know, how important is it that I get my way? And is it just my ego that I'm serving by being on a committee? Anyway, and then I have to figure out what my part is, which sometimes that isn't all that pleasant. I'd rather not look at what my part is in unity and in being a part of a group or part of a relationship. Because there's always give and take. It doesn't matter what relationship you're in, there's always a little bit of give and take. And I would say that for me, doing service work, there's another really important part thing that happens when we are doing service work. In life, we have people that don't show up on time. We have people that don't do what they say they were going to do. We have all kinds of situations like that come into play. And when we are in a group like Al-Anon, it's a great learning experience. You know, if I'm having a hard time and let's see, the person that was supposed to do some job didn't show up, I can call my sponsor and say, oh man, what do I do? What do I do? You know, so then I can talk it over with someone else. Then I can talk it over with that person. You know, it's like I came to Al-Anon to learn some real life skills that I can use with my family, that I can use in my community, that I can use everywhere. But I have to remember that it's my responsibility. I have a part to play in that. I guess the only other thing, it looks like I'm about done with time, but I think that the most important thing about service work is to remember the 12th step. You know, and we are supposed to be of service and share the message. And to me, sharing the message is one of the most important parts of our program, and it's part of service. And I know that a lot of times I think that sharing the message might be working with the sponsor, but sharing the message might also be how I behave with my children so they can see the message, how I behave with my coworkers so they can see that, especially the ones that know that I have a 12-step program. So they can, I can be an example, and I can, they can maybe see what I've got, and maybe somebody might ask me about Al-Anon, which actually, you know, I had a coworker who one day I said, gee, I think that you might really enjoy an Al-Anon meeting. And oh, no, 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 no. Well, what is Al-Anon? And then I told her. And then, you know, it was, I think, probably 2 years later that person came up to me and she said, I think I need an Al-Anon meeting. So, you know, that's how we are of service, you know, in our community and with everybody that we have contact with. So that's all I have. Thank you very much.
Thank you. That was great. Everybody send a round of jazz hands. And I'd now like to welcome our final speaker of the evening, Emelinda. If you please unmute and share. I look forward to hearing you.
Okay. My name is Emelinda. I wanted to thank Helene for inviting me. And I wanted to thank everybody that's here today being of service by just attending a meeting. I think that that's the easiest service position, is just coming to a meeting and showing up. 22 years ago, I walked into an Al-Anon meeting, and I jumped right into service. And it wasn't, my motive wasn't because I wanted to be helpful or I wanted to belong. No, my motive was I was going to be the literature person so that I could carry that big blue bucket to my house every week and I could read all the books for free. So I am an opportunist, Puerto Rican from New York City, and that was my motive. And I knew I had 3-month commitment to read everything I could. And my second, because I'm thinking of this as a as my resume for service positions. So my second involvement was as Bubbles in a skit for District 42 fundraiser. And I went to different meetings and this woman asked me if I would be interested in participating in a skit. And I think that when they're newcomers or people that are shy, I think it's best to come up to them one-on-one level instead of saying, we need, you know, X, Y, and Z. I think the better way is going one-on-one and saying, hey, would you be interested in, oh, I think you do great in this. So anyway, that's how I got into service for being all big. And I was going through a divorce during that time. And throughout all of my practices of being Bubbles, I received so much support and love from the Al-Anon members that were also in the skit. So it eased my sadness and my sorrow and my grief of going through my divorce each time I went to those practices. And also it gave me an opportunity to know what fun was. I didn't know what fun was if it slapped me in the face. I didn't know what a feeling was if it slapped me in the face. All I knew how to do was be busy and raise my hand. Sure, I'll do that, but not have any kind of fun. Everything was work for me. And participating in that skit was actually fun. And years later, we did another skit that was super fun. I was the Al-Anon police and I had a water gun and there was a meeting being held. And every time someone did something wrong, they talked about outside literature, bang, with the water, you're out. And you're talking about counseling, you're out. You're talking about religion, you're out. And it was years ago, but we still laugh and chat and laugh about when I was the Al-Anon police. Sometimes when I go to meetings now, I really wish I had a little water gun and it's kind of, but I'm working on my control issues and just focusing on me so I don't take the water gun to any kind of meetings. And another role that I had was the secretary of the pastor recovery meeting, my home meeting in Palm Springs. And they nominated me because I was not going to, participate on my own. Because my gosh, I got there like at 10 or 10:01 or 10:02. And I know the secretary has to get there early and hand out all those sheets and read the guidelines. And so they nominated me, they voted, they said yes. And I was like, all right. And what I learned from that position is that if I have a service commitment, I'm going to get there on time for that meeting because I'm accountable to the whole group. But if I was going to get there just by myself, I could be late. What's the big deal? At one time, I had switched cars with my son and my bag with the notebook and the guidelines and the handouts were in my car. And we traded cars and I forgot to take that bag out. And so when I arrived to the meeting, I was like, I don't have anything. I don't have the guideline. And the entire meeting loved me despite my big mess. And we read pamphlets. We did things at Lib. We made it work. And it helped me to see that even if I screw up, these people over here in this room were going to love me and not chastise me and embarrass me. And so that increased my self-esteem. And I thought too, well, if they love me, then maybe I could start loving myself. But that took a very long time. That's why this is a slow program for me to learn these things. I became an Alateen sponsor at the suggestion of my sponsor. She encouraged me to do service. And I did that job as a way of manipulation and control. That was my motive, because one of my teenagers, preteens, could be at the Alateen meeting. And I bribed her by saying, if you come to the Alateen meeting, which happens to be in Palm Springs on a Thursday, then we could go to the street fair where you'll see all of your pals. So the truth of the matter is, it was manipulation, but I really got a lot out of being an Alateen sponsor. I heard what other kids were going through with having an active alcoholic in the home. And I also learned personally on how to take a fourth step with just one little sheet of paper, folding it in half. And one side is all my positive traits and the other side is all my character defects, because that's how we did it for Alateen. So my perfectionism did not allow me to do my own regular fourth step, because I thought it had to be 12 point aerial, narrow with columns and perfect. And so I always procrastinated on doing that because my perfectionism got in the way. But by being the Alateen sponsor and having them do their fourth step, I then was able to fold that little piece of paper in half and do my fourth step. I participated in the chair of that heart to heart skit. And in the beginning, I was so worried about, was everyone going to do their part if I didn't nag them or remind them or control them? And there were so many committees, you know, the decoration and the kitchen and the music and the skit. Like, how am I going to be on top of all this stuff? And my sponsor said, it'll all work out. You delegate, you give the guidelines, and you turn it over. Well, I was super scared of turning it over, but I did. And it was magical that at 9 o'clock, the people came early for decoration. And at 10 o'clock, the welcoming committee was there. It showed me that I didn't have to be micromanaging, that delegation works, and that I didn't have to do double-headed management, that I was just a chair, but I didn't have to tell everyone else how they should decorate, how they should do the skit. I just was letting it go. So I think that was one big example of being the chair and seeing how things work out, how God planned it, not how Melinda envisioned it had to be. Another service position that I did was at the AFG convention. Now, those people, they know how to have fun, because the convention is just Al-Anon. It wasn't AA with Al-Anon participation. It was the Al-Anon convention. And because I was in the committee, you get to come a night earlier and people are in pajamas and they're just going from room to room. And it's like, oh my God, all these adults are like having fun. And once I was doing that, forget it. Every year I make it my business to participate in that AFG convention where I can be of service and also have fun and meet up with women all over Southern California that I get to see just at that meeting. When they ask me to chair a convention, I was deathly afraid of that, because when I came to Al-Anon, and I still have remnants of this, is I don't feel that I'm smart enough, good enough, and white enough. I'm Puerto Rican, New York, from New York City, and I was always comparing myself, and I was less than, not enough. And so I thought I couldn't possibly chair a whole convention. And someone that had did it prior said, of course, Melinda, I'll help you. I'll guide you. And it was so nice to just have someone sharing their experience and the hope, how they did, and just giving me some ideas. And it was a really good experience for me. At the convention also, there's opportunities to be of service by sitting in the literature table or selling bracelets or raffles. And in the Mad Dog convention, it's an AA convention. So I got to say, bracelets here, get your bracelets here, and be a big old clown and meet a whole bunch of people. And sitting in the literature table and getting together with someone else that maybe I didn't know from another meeting, and you get to chit chat and have a little private meeting while you're selling literature. So if you're shy and not willing to branch out, I'm giving you a bunch of jobs that you could start thinking about what you would be good at. Another service position was going to the Southern California meeting, and I couldn't believe it that the district pays for part of your expenses, and you get to have a room there. And then the movie that they showed about Al-Anon in Virginia Beach, and the building and the people and the books and the publications. And I thought, holy smoke, this is a worldwide fellowship. And I hadn't realized it until I was at that convention and had the people from Virginia Beach presenting. What else? Some of my character, being a sponsor. Okay, being a sponsor was not a really good fit for me, because unlike what it's said about being sponsor is you guide the people through the steps, you share your experience, strength, and hope. Well, I wanted to give suggestions that you ought to take. And I wanted to develop a developmental project of what you should and should not do. And then you don't even have to call me to say if you did it. Believe me, I'll be following up and calling you. So that really is not a good fit for me, but I still did it for years until finally there was an awakening. And the awakening is, Melinda, you could do a lot of service positions, but sponsoring 9 girls at the same time is not in my best interest. So now I sponsor 2 girls. That's my limit, because then I get crazy with what I think they ought to be doing. And that's God's job, not Melinda's job. But that's taken me a very long time to get. But in sponsorship, when I am meeting with my sponsor and when I'm sponsoring others, which is now on the Blueprint for Progress. So I meet with someone on Monday, I meet with someone on Tuesday, I meet with someone on Thursday. That's enough Al-Anon for me besides the meetings to continue looking at my part of things, my control, my manipulation, my dishonesty, my resentments towards my coworkers who are not as friendly as me. And just saying, you know, let it go. So being a speaker, speaking is easy for me. I was thinking 15 minutes, damn, I need an hour for this. I can't say all this stuff in 15 minutes. I love speaking. Oh, there's my timer. I'll take one more minute. I enjoy speaking. And so that's of service too. And I can do that a little bit more easily than keeping the boundaries of sponsorship. And also service, I'm willing to put my name and telephone number on the meeting list so that if someone wants to just call and reason things out, I'm willing to be of service doing that. And I'm really grateful that you asked me to share today about service and doing my part of doing service by speaking. So thanks for letting me share.
Thank you for sharing. Thank you for stepping up at the last minute. We really appreciate that. I really appreciated that.
I wasn't the last minute girl.
Okay.
It was Nikki.
Nikki, okay. Thank you. My memory doesn't work real well. Let's thank all of our speakers. They all did a wonderful job. Big round of jazz hands. At this time, we're going to turn it over to our moderator, Ricky, who's going to use this time to get your questions answered.
Okay, first I'm going to remind everybody, if you haven't sent in a question yet, go up to my video on the three little dots and it'll say chat. You know, so pick chat, send me a question, tell me who it's for, or if you'd like all three of them to answer your question. I did get a couple of questions. Okay, we'll start. Nikki, do you feel you have taken on too many positions?
No, I don't. I feel like I have pretty good boundaries around that. I have two sponsees, and that is just the right amount. And my speaker chair position, it's been really wonderful. In our group, I don't know about you, but Zoom has opened up the community to people outside of our area. And not that that applies to this situation, but there's a younger woman in our group. And, you know, when I talk about speaker chair, I was thinking it's time for me to step down because it's such a fun job and I want someone else to have the opportunity. And that's how I talk about it. And she came to one of our business meetings and she heard me talking about it. And we have a good relationship anyway. And she texted me and asked me if I would sort of shadow her. So I'm stepping down from speaker chair now. I'm just working with this other woman. And I feel like it's just about right. I don't think that I would step up for anything more right now, but I feel like it's good. Thank you for the question.
I'm getting questions in now. Except I think I'm going to point this one to Karen, since she talked about sponsorship, which was so important. The question is, what is the best way to ask somebody to be your sponsor? What is the best way to go about asking for a sponsor? I might as well read it exactly.
Well, I think that you just ask somebody. I don't think there's a good way. I don't think there's a bad. I know for sure that there's not a bad way. There's no such thing as a bad way. And there's no such thing as a bad time. I've been asked at meetings. I've been had people call me. It doesn't matter when, and the best way to go about asking someone. I think the hardest thing is probably having the courage to do it. It's a very scary thing. And it might be best to, if you're not sure who you want to be your sponsor, or you're not sure how to ask somebody, maybe it would be easier to ask somebody if they could go have coffee with you sometime, or maybe to ask somebody if you could call them sometime, or if somebody's if you get a phone list, just call somebody and visit with them for a while. You know, and visit a few times, or maybe go have coffee a couple times. And you know, the other thing I want people to remember, that I need to remember too, is if you ask somebody to be your sponsor, they don't have to be your sponsor until you're all dead. You know, it's not like getting married. You know, you can have a sponsor for as long as it works for you. You know, and I've worked with people for a year. I worked with people for lots of years, you know, so, you know, and if it ends up not being the right fit for you, everybody can move on. And I think that I know that I don't take those kinds of things personally. I don't know. I would hope that most people wouldn't. But like I said, just make a phone call sometime or talk to somebody after a meeting. Because if you ask somebody that's been around for a while and you approach them at a meeting and you ask them questions, they might ask you, they might say, well, who is your sponsor? And then you have an opportunity to tell them.
Thank you. All of a sudden, I'm getting lots of questions, but I have one from before for Emmalinda. How did your involvement in Alateen help you with your children or your child? You mentioned the child.
Well, I was able to be more empathetic and compassionate towards my own kids when I would hear other children share about feeling afraid when they were driving in the car and the father was under the influence and the police stopped them, or hearing a child say they're walking on eggshells and they feel afraid. Then once I heard it from them, then I can have a greater idea of how my own children felt. So it was just the kids were, their stories were profound in a really simplistic way. And it also gave me an opportunity because I had twin boys and a girl. So the twins, I would bribe them with $10 for every meeting so they could buy pizza. So they used to go to their own meeting after school. But this meeting was an evening meeting and I would take my daughter, and it gave us good conversation after the meeting because she was part of the YALA team.
Thank you. I have a question for all three of you, so we'll take you guys in order. Nikki, then Karen, then Emmalinda. Have you had a service position that really stretched you? Go ahead, Nikki.
Well, I think the district secretary position has stretched me, especially in the beginning when I was first learning. I was making it to be a much bigger job than it is. And part of it is the way that I was doing things. And I actually had a negative script in my head about it. I just have to say, but you know, then I started thinking, you know, I've made this commitment and I like being a part of this, and I need to figure out how to make this something that I enjoy doing. And so when I told myself that and started looking at easier ways to do it, it's not as big a deal as I thought it was in the beginning, but it was pretty difficult. The way that we do our reporting was pretty difficult in the beginning. So yeah, it was a bit of a stretch in that way.
Mm-hmm. And Karen?
Well, I'm sitting here thinking, and I have to give you two difficult service positions.
Okay.
One was I volunteered to be the Al-Anon person at a roundup, and there was that we did with AA. And I was taken over by the AA person in a big hurry. And I just, you know, it just taught me to stop and think about how important was it, and did I really want to, did it matter? No, the job got done, and the person that from AA that I was supposed to work with, they didn't really want to work with me. So I just kind of let that one go. But you know, that was a challenge because I really wanted to do it. And I was the kind that was normally my MO, but I would take over. But I had somebody kind of turn it on me. And so that was kind of a challenge. And then the other challenge was I was an Alateen sponsor for a few years. And I got to tell you, the hardest thing about that job is it was heartbreaking. It broke my heart when kids would come for a while and I knew what they were going through. And when, you know, maybe their parents would quit bringing them, or maybe they didn't want to come, I don't know. But it was just, but you know, I had to grab onto the whole idea that at least they had some exposure. You know, they knew that there was such a thing as the 12 steps, and they knew there was a program. So the hope is that maybe someday in their life, they could use it somewhere else. But that was really hard when I'd get attached to those kids and then they would just disappear. It was really hard.
Thank you.
I would say being a GR in the district, I first went just to provide information about how much money we made at Heart to Heart and just give a wrap up. And I stayed at that first district meeting, and boy, all those personalities in one room had all, they were having a discussion about, should we get the Literature Center to do this and that? And seeing all of that, I told myself, I am never gonna do anything above the group level. And then years later, there was an opportunity for a new meeting that needed a GR. And I said, okay. And 3 years is a long time to go there and hear some gripes. It wasn't so fun. So that was the longest 3 years of my life.
Oh. I think a lot of people are identifying with you on that one. We're all laughing. We've all been there, or many of us have been there. Been there, done that. Anyway, that's... Susie, if she would like to share for a couple of minutes, just in general, you know, about your service and how it relates to, you know, tradition one and unity and what we've been talking about tonight or something. So we'll give you 2 minutes.
Hi, my name is Sue and I'm from Tucson. Well, just moments before Ricky chatted to me to ask me if I would share for 2 minutes, I had thought to myself, listening to, I think it was Emma Linda when she was sharing, I was always told, don't say no if you want to grow. And then Ricky chatted to me, so I couldn't say no. So many great things have been shared tonight, very similar feelings and experiences. I came in as the person who did geographic solutions and always had one foot out the door. And so I can just say for, I think it was Nikki that was sharing about not knowing where people ended up or not knowing where those kids are when they stop going. I was one of those people who I left the state, moved out of the state, and didn't tell my sponsor or anybody that I was moving because I was mad at them. And it wasn't about them, and it was what I needed to do for me at the time. And that's actually what brought me to Tucson, which has been the best place for me to be in Al-Anon. So just I know now that when I have sponsees, you know, I've had way more sponsees drift off and disappear into nowhere than I've had stay with me. And I just always remember that it's not about me and that they're gonna find what they need when they are ready for it. And so, and my experience of first service jobs, I was being asked to do them and I didn't even really know I was being asked to do service. And they said, will you do this? And I said, yeah, sure. And then I get into it and have no idea what I was doing. But, like many people shared, there's always people there to help you and guide you. And I always have gotten so much out of it. I think all of my service positions have stretched me because it's in service that I have that mirror of my character defects really close to my face. And so every different position I've had kind of helps me work on a different thing, and it stretches me and my growing in my program. And so that's why I keep doing it, because I need that. If this disease is so isolating, service is one of the ways that I stay away from being isolated. So
thank you.
Thank you.
The last question I got is so good and so appropriate and so timely that I really want to throw it out to everybody, not just our speakers. So if you're on video, raise your hand or whatever. But the question is, how do you, wait a minute, where did it go? Oh, there it is. How do you encourage others to do service in regular meetings now that we do mostly Zoom? And I'd like to extend it. How do you get them to do service above the group level when they're Zooming and that's all they're doing? So that's open to anybody who would like to answer that question. Oh, scary question, isn't it? Because it's one I've thought about because I'm a new DR here. I did a lot of service when I lived in Connecticut for a lot of years and all the way up through, you know, the state level and beyond, even did volunteer work at the WSO when it was in New York. But it's so hard to get people involved in service now that nobody feel, you know, a lot of people don't feel connected. And the only people I see in service are people that have been in service. So how do we encourage new people to get into service during this crazy time?
I'll speak to it. I know I've been talking a lot, but
Nikki, thank you.
Yeah, I really think it's about personal connection, and Zoom is not as much of a deterrent. Now, there are some people I know who've been in the program a long time who are, they just don't want to use Zoom at all. So they don't. But, you know, it's the phone calls and it's inviting people to participate in something that is presented to them as an opportunity and that you recognize traits in them that might make them good at that position. I think that's part of it. And just on the, you know, my sponsee, I've been working with her on one of my sponsees, I've been working with her on service. And she would, I mean, to get her to share at a meeting took a little while. And I have encouraged her to, this isn't really service, but to reach out and join a gratitude circle. And now I'm encouraging her to do a little more service. And in our group, co-host is a pretty easy to do job. And I've invited her to, you know, think about that and tell her that I'll help her learn how to do that. So I think there are ways, but the main thing is just the personal connection of making phone calls with people or texting them, you know, going on walks with people. I mean, you live in a climate like we do where, thank God, we can get out in COVID times and take walks, socially distanced walks. So
does anybody else want to add to that question?
I can do that. This is Floanne. So this whole workshop was dreamed up in pandemic. I asked for volunteers on pandemic, and we have done absolutely nothing face-to-face. You know, it's just asking. It's asking for help. And like what Nikki was saying, being willing to make phone calls, I didn't even have to do that. I asked the area if I could ask for assistance at the assembly and at AWSC, and people were enthusiastic to get involved. So I don't think it's all that different, except for those people that refuse to get on the electronic meetings. That's a tough one. Hopefully they're going to phone meetings. But, you know, they say it works if you work it, and you've got to be able to be willing to put yourself out there in uncomfortable situations in order to continue your recovery when things occur, you know. So unfortunately, there's some people that are just not willing to what do you call it, stretch themselves into new territory. And that's unfortunate. And I pray for them every single day. There's a woman that lives just down the street from me that she's in program. She hasn't been to a meeting since this whole thing started. And I pray for her every single day because every day gets harder for her. But that's her choice. So I will continue to play in the sandbox with those that are willing to play with me and ask for help when I need it. And that's all I got.
For some more great perspectives on new perspectives and reaching out, together we can. and how that might turbocharge your recovery. We will now close with the Al-Anon Declaration. Let it begin with me.
With me.
When anyone anywhere,
reaches out for help.
Let the hand of Al-Anon and Al-Anon always be there.
And let it begin with me.